love, courage, truth. Glenn Beck.
So, ABC, you and Brian Ross, I don't know exactly what you were thinking. On Friday, Brian Ross, who has been an investigative correspondent for ABC for almost 25 years, reported that during the 2016 presidential campaign, Donald Trump directed Michael Flynn to make contact with Russian officials before the election. The statement was incorrect. You know, something you don't say unless you have a lot of evidence to back it up. Yeah, that's the one thing Ross was a little short of, was evidence. By Friday night, Ross was on ABC World News Tonight reading a clarification. This time, he said Trump didn't ask Flynn to contact Russia until after he had been elected president. The problem with this is it affected the stock market on Friday, because that was kind of a big deal. And it wasn't really a clarification on World News Tonight. It was more of a, let me clarify by completely changing the report. On Saturday, ABC News apologized, saying they deeply regret the serious error and suspended Ross for 4 weeks without pay. 23-year-old veteran reporter. He knows better than this. Except he has a history of these kinds of errors. Do you remember the movie theater shooting in 2012 in Aurora, Colorado? You remember? He's the guy who reported that the shooter, we think, was a Tea Party leader. No, he wasn't. Naturally, President Trump gloated on Twitter about Ross's suspension, and the mainstream media can't stand President Trump. Despite the fact the president is wrong, mainstream media is not all fake news. But when will the media learn? If you want the president to stop yapping about fake news and how the media is out to get him, then you should probably stop with the sloppy reporting. This fake news feud between President Trump and the media lasted all weekend, and it's going to continue. I mean, are you tired of it? Because I'm sick of it. Fake news is now a cliche. It's a joke. It's part of our cultural lexicon now. In these insane times, when we're being flooded with media content, when it's difficult to know who and what to believe, shouldn't we be doing everything in our power, especially if you're one of the nation's major media organizations, to try to put aside politics for 2 minutes and refocus on integrity? Because character matters and the truth matters. In fact, I'm going to go on a limb and say the truth and character matters more than politics. Now, that's not going to get you a ratings point, and it's not going to sell a, you know, Make America Great Again for Christmas cap. But maybe we should all try to make character and truth our priority. And then maybe we'll be able to make journalism trustworthy again.
It's Monday, December 4th. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Hello, Stu.
Mr. Beck, how are you?
I'm really good. A lot of things to talk about today, but let's stick on the Donald Trump over the weekend, and let's start with the Ross story.
Yeah, that one's interesting in that because Ross has made some pretty big mistakes over the years, as you pointed out.
How is he still credible?
I mean, he's still their lead White House correspondent, right?
And he's an investigative reporter, and I mean, you know, I don't understand, you know, what you have to do to be fired. I mean, imagine Sean Hannity made a mistake like that. You think, and it affected the stock market. Do you think people would be calling for his, not suspension, but firing?
Yeah, because the mistake, in case you didn't know the exact mistake, basically he said it was during the campaign, not the transition.
Right.
This contact with Russia. And I think everybody knows, and it's why so far, what has come out of the Mueller thing is, generally speaking, underwhelming, no matter what side of this you're on, is that, you know, if Jared Kushner did direct the director of national intelligence to reach out to one of the main world players about a upcoming issue after Donald Trump was elected president and was just waiting to walk into the office, that is not a dramatic tale. I mean, you know, there are questions about minor parts of it. You know, the old thing of you can only have one president at a time, so yes. You don't necessarily want that to be encouraged constantly. And I understand that, and people, there is something to that at some level. On the other side of it is, that's not what this is about. From a sexiness standpoint, right, the only thing that's real is if it was Donald Trump trying to get help during the election from the Russians, which still to me seems like a long shot, but that's kind of what been the big...
Well, see, here's the problem. Mm-hmm. We've never reached out to them. You know, we never talked to the ambassador. Oh, well, we shook hands. Well, then it was classified. And now it's like, no, we just passed him in the hallway. You know, all of the lies upon the lies. I mean, it really, if you look at this, and if it was just this isolated thing, you'd be like, okay, well, I'm not sure if that's that big of a deal.
Right.
However, it's the lies on top of lies on top of lies on top of lies. I mean, really, why would Flynn lie about this?
Right, because the two things coming from
the White House
are, well, it wasn't a big deal. There was no problem with it. Why is he lying about it? And that's what this investigation is supposed to get done.
Right.
But it's a huge mistake on Brian Ross's part to essentially say this was happening during the campaign and not the transition. The transition stuff might be an indication that leads to something else, right? If it happened during the campaign, it would be a massive development. And so he said that incorrectly. There is an interesting point in that.
Hang on just a second. I'm not willing to go where you just went. And I think we agree with each other. But no, he didn't say that incorrectly. He reported a falsehood.
Yes, because they... we don't know for sure, but they initially said they were a clarification, by the way, the entire gigantic story we broke is actually not that all that gigantic. Just a quick clarification on that. So these clarification, then they changed it to correction. What we don't know at this time is, did he get that information
from a source?
Did the source tell him it was during the campaign and then they corrected it? You'd think, because the way they worded their one of their 19 statements about this was essentially it didn't go through the journalistic rigors that it should have. Meaning to me, it wasn't that he said it wrong, is that he just didn't check out the source enough to he didn't lock it down time frame wise with the source. The source said he was candidate because he wasn't president yet. Mm-hmm. Should have been president-elect is the way they should have referred to that. But in this case, it's a huge difference. It's a massive difference.
As the stock market told us.
Yeah, I mean, it went down a few hundred points. It did bounce back mostly by the end of the day. But still there was...
It shows...
If you sold at the end of that 350-point drop, you're not excited about that fact.
Yeah, and you also look at that and say, that's how big of a story this would have been if he was right.
It would have been.
And, you know, once you saw that, oh, no, that wasn't happening, then you're like, oh, well, maybe he is going to be president.
Yeah. However,
I think, have you heard the story? Do you remember the woman who came out and was talking to the press? She was a huge supporter of Donald Trump for a long time, loved him, was on The Apprentice, and really admired him and everything else. And she came out after the Billy Bush thing.
Yeah, yeah.
And she said, I don't want to say these things, but I have to tell you the truth. He brought me to the Beverly Hills Peninsula.
Yes, I do. Okay. This is one of the sexual assault accusations at the time. Yeah,
I believed her. I mean, she seemed... like she really truly was a big Donald Trump fan for a long time. And she just seemed honest about being crushed by meeting one of her idols. And so I believed her. He came out, and remember, she just kind of went away. She wasn't a big deal. She just wanted to say it, and then she kind of went away. And then Donald Trump came out and called her a liar. Well, she sued. Do you know that tomorrow they are deciding in court whether or not the president can be deposed? Now, listen to this. The White House is saying the president is too busy to be deposed on something like this, and he will deal with it after his presidency. So they're asking the court to put it off until he's out of the Oval Office. Well, if you remember right, this sounds kind of familiar. That's exactly what happened when he was being deposed about Monica Lewinsky with Clinton. The White House said, you can't depose the president. He's too busy. He'll deal with this after he leaves the office. Well, the court had already ruled, no, you can depose the president on something like this. So if they rule tomorrow that the president does have to be deposed on this, this is going to open up a whole can of worms, because if he goes in and he tells the truth that, yes, I did do this, what does that mean? If he says no and there's evidence that exists that, yes, it did happen, then he's perjured himself. And we're back with Monica Lewinsky and Bill Clinton again.
Yeah, but neither of those situations are going to happen, right? I mean,
what do you mean?
He's absolutely not going to say he did anything. There's, I mean, he's never in his life. He's saying his his voice isn't the voice on the Billy Bush tape.
I know.
Like, there's no way he's going to say he did something. And the idea that
perjury.
There's going to be... But there's going to be evidence. Like, what evidence? Other than statements. And this is the world that we live in now. None of these
Remember,
things.
Remember, this is the argument that we had under Bill Clinton. He'll never admit that he did it. And he didn't. He perjured himself. And when he perjured himself, they happen to have the blue dress. Does she happen to have anything?
If she had that, again,
I don't know.
Maybe
don't
not.
Know.
You think that if she had something like that, we would have known about it a long time ago. But maybe you're right. Maybe there's something there. We'll see. It's an interesting addition.
And I don't think it. I think it opens up not just for her, but for others. I think this will become like there's 8 women who accused, and he called all of them liars. And so this woman is leading it, saying, "I want my reputation back.
Yeah.
I did not lie." And she's had death threats and everything else. And so there's these 8 women. If they open the door for her, it may open the door for all of them. If anyone has any evidence, then you're getting your, then you are, I mean, Donald Trump said, as soon as he leaves the Oval Office, he is suing them and he's going to take them to court for defamation of his character. It may
a circus. It's interesting, though, from the media perspective. There's 2 sides of this, and they're both equally important. One, the idea how excited the media was when all of this stuff came down with Russia and Flynn and all of this. I mean, it was insanity. These people, they're celebrating, they're throwing parties. It's terrible for the country, right? Like, if the president did do these things and it gets caught, it's awful for the country. And what was the media doing? Celebrating. And people are so exuberant that they get over the top with their excitement. And I think that's why mistakes like the Brian Ross thing happen. They're so sure, they're so excited to get rid of this guy in any way possible that they make sloppy mistakes, or I think you could argue mistakes intentionally done to try to hurt the president and Republicans in general. But on the other side of that, and I think it's important to note, why, if this was just all fake news and these people were all the you know, the no character disasters that they're described as and is summarized by the president at times and Breitbart and all these other places, why on earth would ABC correct this report? It was an unnamed source. No one in the world would ever know that they got that fact wrong. If they were completely without character, they could easily say, well, no, it wasn't that source. The source that's coming out now publicly and telling you that I got it wrong? No, that was a different source. You didn't know about it. They had a million ways out of that story because they gave you no information. There was no reason for them to correct that report.
I want to be really careful on this. I don't think that there is... It's weird. I think there's meaningful change in the media, but it's not lasting change. And here's what I mean. I think there is meaningful change where they know they're up against their greatest foe. They also know they are being watched by the American public, and the American public doesn't trust them. Okay.
Right.
And so they are saying, okay, batten down the hatches, make sure it's right. It's kind of a Watergate thing, to where the Washington Post was looking at the, you know, at Woodward and Bernstein and saying, no, get another source. Okay. Mm-hmm. They know they're up against a huge foe. So get it right, because they have no credibility. With that being said, the minute Donald Trump is out and their side is in, they will go right back to ignoring all of this stuff. So there's meaningful change, just not lasting change.
Glenn Beck.
So Feinstein came out with a statement that's pretty bold, that they're building an impeachment case now. Listen to what she said over the weekend.
The Judiciary Committee has an investigation going as well, and it involves obstruction of justice. I see it in the hyperphonetic attitude of the White House, the comments every day, the continual tweets, and I see it most importantly in what happened with the firing of Director Comey. And it is my belief that that is directly because he did not agree to lift the cloud of the Russia investigation. That's obstruction of justice.
Yeah, so
I don't know. I mean, it's like, it's hard to impeach someone off of Twitter for their tweets. You're going to impeach him out of the White House for his tweets? I mean, I don't know.
I just think here's what's going to happen. It depends on what happens tomorrow. My theory is that this case with the women is going to be, Bill said this on Friday, that's going to be their next the next approach. And mm-hmm. I think that's true because of this case. If this case is allowed to go through tomorrow, I think it's going to change all of the dynamics. And I think you're going to get to the next year or so where the president is just going to say, at the end of my term, I'm not going to run again. I think that's what's going to happen. I don't know if he's going to be impeached. If they find more with this investigation, if it ends today where we have it with Flynn doing, there's nothing's going to come of it. If they have more and Flynn is leading them to something and has real evidence, then you're going to have an issue on impeachment. But I think this is just going to mount so much that I think he's just going to say, you know what, I'm going back to my life. Let somebody else do it. I think that's what's going to happen.
It's certainly possible, though the president cannot obstruct justice.
No.
Just so you know.
No.
That's their
he
name.
Really needs new lawyers. He really does. I mean, I don't know where he's getting these, you know, strip ball lawyers, but they're misinforming him.
Glenn Beck. This is the Glenn Beck Program.
Interesting weekend for Bitcoin. It went from 12,000 to a low of 10.6. Do you know why? This is actually something you should watch. Do you know why it had such a big blip? It lost $1,000 that fast. You know why?
I don't know why, no.
Telegraph reported right about the time of the big drop in the UK that they are now, the UK is going to launch a crackdown on the virtual currency Bitcoin amid growing concern it's being used to launder money and dodge tax. So now you have England saying, we're going to look into this. We might start regulation. So it went down almost 2,000 points. And then by the end of the day, it had bounced back up. What is it now?
11,300.
11,300.
That's
okay.
It.
Mm. All right.
What a disappointment.
Now,
only up from 800 in January.
Yeah. No, a lot of people say that Bitcoin is in a bubble, and you could make the case, and a pretty strong case, that it's in a bubble.
Mm-hmm.
One that I haven't been willing to really look at because, you know, this time it's different.
This time it's different. It's never going to stop. It's always going to be like this.
Right. It's never different. However, I think I have the evidence that makes me say we are definitely in a bubble. Here it is. Launched just a few days ago, CryptoKitties. CryptoKitties, essentially like a digital version of Pokemon cards, but based on the Ethereum blockchain, is becoming one of the biggest viral sensations to catch on in the tech world. Built by a Vancouver and San Francisco-based design studio, people are spending a crazy amount of real money on the game. So far, about $1.3 million has been transacted, with multiple kittens selling for 50 ethereal coins, and the genius kitten being sold for a record of 246. That's $113,000. So here's what it is. I think there are only a certain number of virtual kitties that are born.
And you mean, when you say kitty, like you mean cats, like little cats?
Little digital cats. Okay. Just a digital cat. And they're born through the blockchain.
Good.
Okay. So you buy a cat that is a digital blockchain cat. Mm-hmm. And then you can interact with the digital cat. Let's see if what it says that you do. I know the idea is to trade. It's like Beanie Babies, to trade and to buy, you know, a better cat that doesn't exist.
Okay, so it's a bubble. Okay, we can now.
It's definitely
clarify.
A bubble. What you do is you collect cats, and here are the cats right here. How to play? Okay. They're the cats.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. So they all look pretty much the same. Mm-hmm.
They're very different. They're very different. Game was seeded with 100 founder kitties. Okay. This there's also a new Gen Zero cat released every 15 minutes, which are listed for the average price of the last five sold plus 50%, but the sale price declines over 24 hours until somebody actually buys the cat. Anyone can sell their kittens via an auction where they pick a starting price and an ending price, and the price declines over time until someone buys the cat. So, for example, I could put a kitten up for sale for a one-day auction at one ethereal coin. Is it
Ether or Ethereum?
Ethereum coin, mm-hmm. starting at one and a ending price of zero. And if somebody buys it 12 hours after the auction starts, they pay me 0.5 Ethereum,
which
coins.
Is like a couple hundred bucks.
You can also create new kittens by breeding them.
Okay. So blockchain sex, basically, is what's happening?
No, blockchain cartoon kitty sex.
Okay.
Okay.
That's much more
so
important.
You are taking money that has no real value because it doesn't actually exist. You're buying that bogus money. And you're trading that bogus money for a bogus cat that doesn't exist. And your hope is that you're going to sell that fake cat or breed a better fake cat and sell it for more of the fake coins than anybody else.
Obviously. Did you feel the need to explain that to the audience?
No. Okay. No, I mean, I was just talking down to a couple of the slow people that don't really understand that, yes, indeed, perhaps this is a bubble.
It's funny you brought up Beanie Babies, which I people talk about in this bubble way. That's such a fascinating story. I did an interview with a guy who wrote a book about it. I think it's called The Great Beanie Baby Bubble. And you think, well, it's kind of a silly topic. It's a fascinating story, though. This guy was going around trying. He's a real big entrepreneur and decided to try to do create these little animals that he would sell. And make money off of. And really the reason why the Beanie Baby thing was such so big for that time was that he decided to call these things, instead of just discontinuing them, he started calling them retired.
Ah.
And when he started saying retired, as soon as he said we're about to retire this stupid Beanie Baby, people would rush to stores and bid the price super high. And so the whole time, the entire process was people trying to figure out who would next be retired, because as soon as they got retired, the price would go up. And the people buying the new ones,
so stupid,
were based basically on the idea that eventually there would be a retirement and they'd be able to cash in. And what the guy who wound up doing it was obsessed with these things, meticulous to the point of he would spend hours looking over samples of the eyes. And like, he was like, it took it super seriously and just designed like every one of these things. And he wound up making like $2 billion off of this. And it kind of came and went.
So how many people have parents who collected the Beanie Babies, and they have a closet full of the Beanie Babies, and you knew at the time Beanie Babies aren't going to, it's not going to work.
Yes.
You're not going to retire on the Beanie Baby money. And they saved them and they have them. Now is the time where boys are boys and men arrive. The men say, the hell, my Beanie Baby collection isn't going to be worth something. I'm keeping it. Because everybody's looking at their Beanie Baby collection now going, this is so stupid. Get rid of it. Once everybody gets rid of it, those who saved those Beanie Babies.
And you carry that dream to your grave, don't you?
Yeah, I'm going to lock them all in my coffin with me.
It's funny. Who knows what happens with this? I mean, it could, cryptocurrency could have parts of that. There is more technology involved in it than Beanie Babies, so you think it might have a little bit more...
The kitties?
Yeah, well...
No, the kitties. Dear God, don't try to... Stu, don't try to talk yourself into the kitties at value.
No, I'm not talking. I'm talking about. I'm taking this technology.
Oh, the blockchain has. Yeah, the blockchain kitties don't have any value. But
well, I mean,
blockchain.
Everything has the value the market assigns to it, right? So, I mean,
that is crazy.
You just gotta wait for the right buyer. And usually it's a moron.
So I actually started reading a book about the tulip thing.
Yeah.
And it actually makes more sense, you know, because you think, for instance, tell me this tulip story that you know.
The tulip story is there became this sort of irrational exuberance, is a phrase they often use in these terms, where people believed that they were super valuable, and they started trading them as currency. And
so what was the spark for it? Why did it, what happened? How is it possible?
It's been a while. I don't remember.
Okay. So right. I never heard it. So here's the thing. This was at the time when people were just starting to keep gardens and starting to have lawns and everything else. Mm-hmm. And the really, really rich people were starting to do that. The bulb, I don't know where the tulip bulb came from. I'm not deep in the book. I'm kind of scanning it. Mm-hmm. But the idea that all of a sudden a thing of beauty, it's looked at as art. This one bulb is art. Okay, so mm-hmm. you could put this in your house, or you could put this in front of your house or whatever, and it's a thing of beauty and a thing of art. So it's like the art craze. To wear a painting that you're like, okay, that doesn't even look like anything. That's just a blue canvas. No, it's worth $121 million. Okay, well, good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, same thing. They thought this is a thing of beauty and a thing of art, and there's only one of them. And so they thought this is going to catch on because all of the rich people are going to want these all in their gardens all over the world. Which they did. It just didn't work out as well as they thought because you can make more of them.
You can make more tulips?
Yes, you
can. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
There's inflation in the tulip market?
Yeah.
Yeah. It does seem that way.
Right. But you could see how people, like Bitcoin, you could see how people could go, well, now, wait a minute. Hang on. You know, there weren't a lot of tulips. We think now tulips, I mean, they're everywhere. Not a lot of tulips. and they're making new tulips, and they're kind of, I don't know how you breed tulips, but they're making new ones. And they're like, oh, you know what? People are starting, you know, people are going to have these things called lawns, and they're going to want a flower box. It was at the beginning of flower boxes and bringing flowers in. I mean,
right.
You don't really even think of it like that, you know?
Yeah. It's a bit of a stretch.
No, that's why it was a bubble and a disaster.
Okay.
But again, you could kind of, like, I can't make a case for the kitty cats. Can't.
Well, I mean,
no.
We've had many.
Can't.
This is the Pet Rock, right?
Who spent? No. No, the Pet Rock costs what? $2?
But
people,
I mean,
are spending $150,000 on a kid.
But the same thing with Beanie Babies, and the same thing with every one of these trends. You can always say, a Cabbage Patch doll, that's just a doll. I mean, you could always say that, right? It's about what level of entertainment and enjoyment it gives the individual. That's why things happen on a market. There's a lot of stuff that's worth. I mean, I see, you know, purses that my wife buys, and I think, that looks like
again,
it's worth $12,
again,
and it's not.
Again, not at all.
No.
Again, that is a thing that is tangible.
Yeah, but
that
tangible
is a thing that goes
with
style.
But that is something, that's a weird, that's an old-timey observation, right? Like, we used to say the same thing, like, that company, they don't even produce anything. That's what we used to say when the quote-unquote internet bubble happened, and now I'm pretty sure that one wound up being kind of big, that internet thing.
All right, I'm ready to buy an Ethereum cat.
I already have 12, they're for sale right now in auction.
Yes, but I have the genius kitty.
Glenn Beck.
I mean, you know, I don't want to gang up on Detroit, but man, what a depressing thing, you know, to try to bring the Silver Dome down. Everything is crumbling. Nothing is working right. And you're like, okay, let's get rid of this eyesore. Let's bring this thing down. You try to blow it up and it won't come down. That's, I mean, I feel bad for Detroit. It's like, come on, man. We're the Charlie Brown of cities.
Many Lions fans were pointing out that the Silver Dome has survived many previous implosions as well. you can't just bring it down with one of those. It is a kind of a depressing thing, though. Basically, every building in the city is crumbling to the ground. And
you know, but
this one, they actually want to crumble.
They say that
the
Detroit
ground.
Is actually becoming one of the more dynamic cities in the country. I think it may have a renaissance. It may have a renaissance.
It may. I mean, there's certain, you know, you have those, there's certain really wealthy benefactors who have decided, like, I love this city and I'm staying
like
here.
Like, I love Shinola, what Shinola is doing. Do you know, are you familiar with Shinola?
Oh, my, of course.
No,
obviously.
You're not?
No, I'm not.
Oh, look up Shinola. They're fantastic. They make these incredible bikes. They make incredible watches. And they started and said, we're going to build a great company that builds really great items, and we're going to build them in Detroit. And so they did, and they've taken off, and I mean, really high quality stuff, really good stuff. Never heard of Shinola, really?
Yeah, no.
They're one of the first companies to go into Detroit, and they've kind of kicked off a renaissance in Detroit.
There's another, I can't remember which guy he was, a billionaire from some line of business, and decided, you know what, I'm just going to go back, and I'm going to start building these amazing developments, and I just love the city, and I want to keep doing it. And he's just being vilified in the community because he's tearing down what Detroit has always been, and he's
a
trying.
A crap heat?
Apparently, people are like, there's some people. This is what happens every time.
They're tearing down all the crack houses.
Like, that's what they do. They say this in New York all the time. Someone will build a really nice, apartment complex in a downtrodden community, and they'll say, well, now you're pricing out all the residents. And it's like, well, it's not their responsibility to set price for the entire community. They're doing something that's improving the community, right? And then they get beaten up for it. It's a no-win situation. It's just why you just stay home and play video games. And stuff all day.
Wait, hold it. That went south fast.
Glenn Beck.